And welcome back, everybody. It's another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 717. Coming at you on a Thursday evening to talk some third base NFBC debates and some recent news, because it's been a little while since we were on the show chatting it up with you guys. Hope you've been enjoying the team-by-team previews. We're back to a little bit of normalcy on tonight's episode. First, you can find me on Twitter at BDentric, and my co-host coming at you from the Northeast to not talk Yankees, but to talk debates with me tonight. You can find him on the Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Tid, how are we doing, my friend?
Doing very well, Bubba. Yeah, you alluded to where I am. It's pretty cold up here. It's supposed to be high in the teens early next week, so that should be interesting.
High in the teens. Good Lord.
Dancing with zero minus one for the lows at night. It's not common to have that, but it happens every once in a while. So it happened once before, and it didn't last too long. I can do a couple of days. It's got to stay inside for a while.
Yeah, that's a definite inside, and I guess get your draft hat on or something and just chill for a bit, because that's rough, at least in my world. I'm used, soft Californian out here. I just it's like 30 degrees at night. I'm not happy. So yeah, I catch flack from all my East Coast friends this time of year because I can still golf most of the time if I want to, type thing. But yeah, here we are.
Definitely jealous of that.
Yeah. Well, we won't talk golf right now, because that would be way too much fun. And we got some baseball to do. So let's talk some. Well, first off, last time we chatted, you began drafting. How have things been going now? As you've completed two, or you're in your second DC, and you did a gladiator. So what's it like? You got the blood flowing now. How's drafting going?
It's going well. I consider myself full NFBC degenerate now, because I'm in two drafts currently. I made my 41st pick in my second four honey that I signed up for, and then I'm in round six or seven of the third one. And like we were talking about before, I kind of jumped the gun with signing up. I probably could have waited a little bit, but the 400 to take a while to fill, so I didn't want to have to go too long in between drafts to wait for the third one to fill up. But yeah, I'm in full force. I'm going to hopefully do more DCs this year, since it's already my third one and it's the middle of January. I'll probably maybe do 150 DCs after this, and then call it a day until auctions and Fab League. So, but yeah, I'm full go in it, and it's addicting, as you know very well.
As I know very, very well. You have more patience than I do. You're talking about, oh, I'm in my second and third draft. That was like November, dude.
Yeah, that was your Thanksgiving mark.
What are you talking about? But it's good to have you in there. You dropped a funny one in the Discord there. I was like, yeah, welcome to the party, pal. That's how you know things are really going strong. And pretty soon, for a lot of us, we'll have TGFBI and Bar for the Earth drafts are coming up for some, and there's just a million drafts. All that stuff's coming. Not to mention, you'll be getting ready for your mains. I'll be doing mine. Like, it's just a whirlwind of fun. Heck, we'll be live streaming Monday night, the Beat Bubba OC, the two of us. Ben's going to be here to help, I say moderate, more like heckle, keep the flow of things going.
I'll try to be relatively kind. I'll see what happens, though.
The biggest thing Ben's there for is when I'm like stressing out about a pick, he can just like either talk to the chat or just kind of say something about what's going on the board. And that's the biggest thing, so I don't have to sit there and do both. But that'll be fun indeed. All right, let's talk about some recent news. Not a bunch of big news. We're still waiting on Pete Alonso and Bregman, and what's Vladdy going to do? And so many things. Roki Sasaki could have been signed yesterday. Still waiting on that news. A lot of those kind of issues, but some smaller ones. Justin Verlander signs a one-year deal with the Giants. The more I've thought about it, for the price point, I'm like, okay, 1 year, whatever. I'm not pumped by any means, but it's what these guys are going for, these veterans, and I'm still not interested in fantasy, but any thoughts on that?
I'm there with you. I'm not too interested. His numbers are pretty bad. Even underlying numbers are pretty awful last year, and he's 42. Hopefully for your Giants, he's serviceable for you guys. But, yeah, in fantasy, I'm definitely going to look elsewhere.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Like, I've seen some people say, oh, well, at 455 ADP, I'm interested. I'm like, okay, I get it. If you want at 455, he's got a pulse. And if he can run into 20-plus starts, it might not be the end of the world. But there's a guy going at 441 right before him that just signed with the Baltimore Orioles on a one-year deal named Charlie Morton. I'd rather take my chances with Charlie Morton than Justin Verlander. Again, could be totally wrong if Verlander finds a little spark. But what's your thoughts on Charlie Morton joining the Baltimore Orioles rotation?
Yeah, I definitely – I probably prefer Morton to Verlander. The thing, though, with Morton is I think he's had like a – I don't know, like a 1-4 whip the last 2 years in a row, and that can really kill you. And he's almost as old as Verlander now. I want to get the numbers for sure. Let me check. Whip, yeah, 1.43 in 2023 for Morton, 1.32 whip last year. And whip is always like that silent killer. I mean, if he needs strikeouts and wins because of the situation with the Orioles, I get it. I just don't want to invite like a pretty certainly like a whip that's that probably going to be that high again onto my teams if I can help it. But I mean, if you're desperate, I get it. I'm going to try to avoid as well, though.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. Like these, we're talking about this point in the DC 450 area. It's late. It's late. So it's around 30, 35, somewhere. That depends when you actually pull the trigger on that one. So Will's kind of it's your depth pieces at that point in time. Sticking with Baltimore, might not have a huge fantasy impact, but wanted to mention Andrew Kittredge signed with the Orioles. He was a very, very good late in reliever for the Cardinals. And if, God forbid, something happened to Felix Bautista again, I have a weird feeling he might jump into that backup role. But that's all. I just want to throw that out there because it was not the DC I'm in now, but the last DC before that, he gets signed with 2 picks to go, and someone took him right then and there. Just throwing that out there. It was one of those things. So I don't know if you have anything else on Andrew Kittredge, but the only relevance I can find for now is if something happens to Bautista, could be in play.
I agree. He's currently on roster resource, the primary setup man to Bautista, which kind of hurts because I just took Sir Anthony in that DC that's farther along. But I mean, Closer Monkey or Reliever Recon, who owns Closer Monkey now, they have it as Cano and then Dominguez, but they haven't updated it since the signing. Who knows what'll happen. So yeah, I think trying to target the Baltimore backup is a good idea considering what's going on with Felix Bautista coming back from Tommy John. And I think he had a setback even so after the surgery, but yeah, Kittredge is definitely appealing. Maybe if he's still there in my DC, I might take a second stab at the backup closer in Baltimore.
Yeah, just something. That's the only reason I wanted to mention. Usually there won't be too much more on him, but if you are looking at ADPs, Andrew Kittredge has a 660 ADP, as high as 503. So I think people have started to move in the direction of taking Kittredge. Speaking of potential closers, the Toronto Blue Jays signed Jeff Hoffman apparently after the Orioles and the Braves said due to a physical. So the Jays, of course, the team that always makes Jays fans happy during free agent periods, signed Jeff Hoffman, who currently has an ADP of 258 over the last 12 drafts, as high as 220. What's your thoughts on Hoffman? Because I think a lot of people are like, sweet, we're going to get him as the closer for the Jays. He's got a good price ADP. And then like 3 days after that, we start getting these little bits of news about potential failed physicals. So what are your thoughts on the Hoffman situation in Toronto?
Yeah, he's definitely going in the top 100 now because you mentioned the Gladiator that I did. And then the one DC, he went around pick 90, I think, kind of in line with Urseg and the guy on the Mariners. McGill in that range. So he's going like that tier of closers right now. And I was going to take Hoffman in the DC just to switch it up, but he went the pick in front of me. I got Urseg instead, which is fine.
Yeah, I like that.
And we'll see. I think that was before the second team came out saying that they didn't like the physical results with Hoffman, but he didn't miss any time last year, and he says that he's okay. I mean, you always have to take that with a grain of salt when a player says they're okay and then there's medical concerns. So I don't know if I'll be as gung-ho now, but both teams wanted Hoffman as a starter, and that's why the Jays said, okay, we'll take you as a closer. But I mean, there's still enough stress on the shoulder or whatever the issue was when you're closing and throwing this as hard. But I think considering how the closers are so uncertain once you get past pick 100 right now, I would probably take the risk on Hoffman though.
Yeah. I get it. If you want, I wouldn't make him a closer one. I'll say that much. I'd make sure
he might be in that range.
Yeah, I'd make sure he's your closer too. If you're going Hoffman, or if he's your closer one, be aggressive on closer two type situation. Mm-hmm. Don't rely on him to carry the squad for a bit as you're drafting along there. Gavin Lux was traded to the Cincinnati Reds. There's kind of a multifaceted situation taking place now. We'll start with Gavin Lux as his ADP is 381. He's gone as high as 237 though. So people are liking this move to Great American Small Park. They're still not like for sure what his deal is. Like right now they got roster resource has him as a platoon DH. He could slide in to an outfield spot, or he could slide in a second base, move Matt McClain to the outfield, or there's a lot of moving parts that could take place here with the Cincinnati Reds. What's your thoughts on Lux going to Cincinnati? Because besides the ballpark, some people I think are optimistic he can get fixed or something, just a change of scenery, but I have not picked that button yet.
Yeah, I don't have him on any of my teams yet, Lux, but I don't think that his ADP should change much because he's still projected at 9th. He was going to do that on the Dodgers. And even on the Dodgers, I felt he had uncertain playing time because of the flexibility they have with Edmund and Mookie being able to move around the diamond. And now Lux is just the projected DH for the Reds. And this is with Noel V. Marte in the minors. And they were playing Santiago Espinal a lot last year. And I think that's really the extent of the competition for him. But I think I read that, like, well, obviously they went out and got Lux, and I think they want to play him. So the playing time should be fine for now. It's just, he's a platoon bat with not a lot of speed and no power. So there's not a lot of appeal there. So I'll probably continue to pass over him in drafts.
Now on the flip side of this, with Lux leaving town, we know the Dodgers signed Hyesung Kim, big glove, good OBP guy, but there's still question marks if he's an everyday guy or a super utility, because the Dodgers made it sound like he'd be super utility. Now, if he's super utility, then there's your Edmund thing you mentioned. He can come back to the infield, opens up the outfield for one Andy Páez. Does the move of Lux interest you once again, Andy? If you were, like I was, in on Andy Páez, and then when they signed Teoscar, I was a little heartbroken. But you can still get Andy Páez at around a 390 ADP. Would you be getting back in on that right now with the potential moves taking place in LA?
I think I started drafting as the signing or the trade, the signing happened. So I never got to Páez's ADP when Teoscar wasn't signed yet. So I kind of passed over Páez or didn't even consider him in that draft. And I haven't really yet. I mean, the Dodgers have many options. They have Rojas on the bench right now, Chris Taylor. So I guess they could kick out Kim, or Edmund just could kick him out as well, like you said. I wouldn't count on Páez unless he's like my outfield 7 or 8, maybe in a DC. Cause I want to have my first couple bench outfielders with some certain playing time. Then once you get to like 8, 9, 10, I'm a little more free with how secure or not secure their roles are. So in that case, I'd be fine, but I don't know if the ADP would allow me to get them at that range.
Yep. No, that's fair. I have been a little more interested. I know that much. And jumping back in on that train, because I was a huge Andy Páez fan before all the transactions. Like the Conforto, like I saw Teoscar coming, the Conforto, and screwed it all up. So, all right. To the Kansas City Royals, they brought Michael Lorenzen back on a 1-year deal. We saw Lorenzen throw 130 innings last year with a 3.3 ERA, limited strikeouts, but, you know, serviceable arm. Right now, Michael Lorenzen has an ADP of 572. Is this a guy you'd be interested in come DC time?
You would think so because of the kind of pitcher that he is. But looking at, like, the K rate is just so terrible. And then as a result, the ERA estimators are so bad for him too. What's really annoying, though, is that I was looking to draft Alec Marsh in a couple of DCs. And this kind of muddies Marsh's waters because the note, at least on NFBC's player page for Chris Bubich, is that they want him to be in the rotation. And then Lorenzen has been a star. I mean, he's gone back and forth a lot. So is Marsh, though. But they went out and signed Lorenzen. I'm sure he'll probably get the first crack at the rotation. And another thing I kind of thought of that I was going to ask you is, so they're projected to have a 6-man rotation right now. And they're one of a handful of teams right now in roster resource, the Royals, that are projected to have a 6-man rotation. Do you think they're going to stick with that? Or do you think, like, the Diamondbacks are one? Let me pull, I have the list here. So it's the Dodgers, D-backs, Royals, Nationals, and Cubs. Last time I looked, all were projected for 6-man rotations. So do you think, for example, like the Royals would keep that, or think there's a real move?
An episode coming out on Friday, as we record on Thursday, is the Kansas City Royals team preview. One Kevin Hastings does not think that. They think what it'll come down to is it'll be a battle between Chris Bubich and Marsh. Maybe Lorenzen gets lost out in that, but he thinks Lorenzen starts, but still could find a back and forth, like you mentioned. He thinks they give Bubich to start out the gate for the words that they have said. They want to try to get him back in the rotation. Marsh goes to the bullpen as a long man, but will get a handful of starts like he did this past year. He says eventually he would love to see Bubich back in the bullpen for as good as he was. Then you get that good seventh, eighth, ninth with him, Harvey, and Ursig. That'd be really strong. So long way around it, he does not think they will have a six-man rotation, and he thinks Marsh will be the odd man out, barring something insane during spring training.
Yeah, I'm looking in right now, and they already have three lefties in the bullpen, so I could see Bubich staying in the rotation. It'd be kind of weird to have four lefties. I mean, you can definitely kick out Daniel Lynch or Sam Long.
I was looking at that, too. I'm like, here's a couple of guys that could probably take off if they needed to.
Yeah, so there's definitely a lot of uncertainty there.
Yeah, so right now that's what he thinks, but again, you know how these teams operate. Long ways to go for that one. Plus, they were the pillar of health in that rotation last year. I don't know if you could do that 2 years in a row, so you might get more opportunities as well. I wanted to mention Chris Martin, nice back-end reliever from the Red Sox, signed with the Texas Rangers, who are still in need of a closer. So right now, Chris Martin is kind of the favorite to close in Texas. I still think they signed a Kirby Yates or something. They've been linked to talking to Kirby Yates. But Chris Martin has a 540 ADP. I will say this much, though, Ben. Over those last 12 drafts, he's gone as high as 234. He's only been drafted in 9 out of 12 drafts, so I'm guessing he wasn't signed in the first three, and then things just escalated from there. So don't use the 540 ADP. Use more of like a 240 ADP when you're looking into that.
That's even high for me because in my second DC, the one that's almost done right now, he went, I think, in like a rep pick 300, which is, I thought was an okay price. I was able to grab Martin as one of my backup relievers in my first one after the sign. Like, it was weird. He was signed, and then there was never like a rush to go get him. But like you said, I've been expecting Yates to re-sign with the Rangers as well. But some of the stuff I saw, it's kind of the, whether it was the beat writers or whoever else, they kind of think the Rangers are going to be cooling it down with their signings. And they definitely said that Martin would be in the mix. And he's one of the better relievers, I think, that they have right now, at least in the back end of the bullpen. Because I remember looking at their projected lineup when I was doing, or the bullpen when I was going through my DCs, and I wanted no business of Robert Garcia or Jacob Webb or whoever else they had there. So I think Martin's definitely the closer now. It's just, I wouldn't push him up too high yet because of the Yates potential, or even Tanner Scott, or maybe even Estevez. I think there's five closers in my count that are still out there.
And there's still a lot of them. Yeah.
Robertson could go back there as well.
Yep. Yep. That's why
I mean, I like Martin if you get him at a good price, but yeah, don't push him up.
That's the biggest thing. Is like he's going up higher now. I'm like, yeah, I don't think so. Not sure that one's going to happen. Ahmed Rosario signs with the Washington Nationals. I guess just a big time veteran platoon play because he can play everywhere, second, short, third, heck, probably first, outfield, all over the place. Roster Resource has him platooning with Jose Tena at third base. I like that because at first blush, I was like, do not do anything with Luis Garcia Jr. And everyone's like, well, he can't hit lefties. I'm like, he's like 24. Like, let him play, figure it out. You could, if he's 28, tell me he can't live. Okay, we'll talk. But after the season he just had, do not pull that stunt right now. And so I'm taking deep breaths and kind of walking away from this situation. Are you worried at all with the Ahmed Rosario signing?
I'm not worried. I'm just more annoyed because of what you said about Luis Garcia. And I do have Tanya in one of my DCs so far. I like the second and third base. No, he's just third base. I like the third base eligibility because he has some little power, some speed, and he hit for a decent average last year. But I'd rather, if any of the two, of course, I'd rather have Tane to be the one that platoons because he's a bench bat anyway. This is annoying because Rosario is, I don't know, I was definitely more confident about Garcia, but I think Tane is probably, I mean, I could see Rosario playing for Garcia every once in a while if there's a tough lefty and maybe someone else plays for Tane or someone else on the roster at that point, who knows. So I mean, Rosario has been drafted in my DCs, maybe for like an injury, but I don't, unless Tane just stinks and what we saw in September was a fluke, Rosario could potentially play full time at third base. So I guess there's that possibility if you want to take him late. But yeah, I'm just hoping that, like you said, Luis Garcia will be fine and they don't touch his playing time.
Now, one that I was going to just walk past when I was putting the news together, it was Jorge Lopez signed with the Washington Nationals. And then the blurbs I kept reading as I kept looking more and more into it to make sure it wasn't just a one writer's suggestion, it was kind of everywhere, is Jorge Lopez might be the closer for the Nationals to start out the season, which I'm like, whoa. And you look at like projections, they all have been projected for like 14 saves, which, okay, at an ADP of 660, not bad. Now he's gone as high as 444, but honestly, Ben, at 444, if he gets me 10 plus saves, I'm still kind of interested, weirdly enough, because that's just the way of the world right now. So Jorge Lopez wasn't even on my draft radar a week ago, and now I have to bring him into it, apparently, because it is the Nationals, given they have three options on roster resources closers. I haven't looked at reliever recon yet. I probably should, but what's your thoughts on the situation? Because like I said, I wasn't even considering him as an option a week ago, and now it feels like I need to.
Well, Closer Monkey, aka Reliever Recon, has Lopez, Fair, and Derek Law in a committee, and Lopez is leading the committee right now.
So that's still like, yeah, 14, 15 saves probably. Like, good God.
Yeah, right. And it's definitely valuable. I would draft Lopez. I'm not sure how it's probably gone in my, at least that one DC, but the other guy I did like, though, taking a flyer on is Jose Ferrer. He's a lefty. So maybe if they do want to do like a lefty righty split with Lopez and him, that's pretty good. Ferrer's been getting drafted in, I think, all my DC so far. Well, it's just two, but yeah, it's definitely a tricky situation. I don't think they would sign another closer than Nationals. So I guess for now it is Lopez. I just pulled up his stats that I have in my sheet, and not really terrible underlying numbers for him. The walk rate was a little high, 8.8% last year, but the swinging strike was only 9.5, and the O swing against was 27.2, which is pretty poor. But I mean, the ERA estimators were all under four, at least the Sierra X FIP and X ERA. Doesn't for having a little bit of a high walk rate, only 34% ball rate, which is pretty good. So not the worst numbers for Lopez, and I had him that one year when he went off, so I know he's capable of doing it, but. Yeah, with the Nationals, they could be decent. So maybe he does get at 14 to 20 if he stays in the role most of the year. But who knows what's going to happen with that. It's definitely a RP3 at least.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation, to say the least, that, again, I did not plan for ever with Jorge Lopez. All right, a couple more here. Martin Perez signs with the Chicago White Sox one-year deal. Just a serviceable veteran with an ADP of 6 – no, that's the wrong guy, with an ADP of 695, as high as 560. I've already taken him once in a DC just because, like, he's that boring, doesn't do a lot, but doesn't crush you. That'll get you innings like a Quintana, Perez. So, yeah, I think it's a great landing spot, all things considered, because he'll pitch every fifth day until they trade him.
Right, yeah. He'll have his spurts of probably being good. It happened again last year with him. So, yeah, he's that classic round four in the 40s DC pick, and that's basically it, though. Don't want anything to do with them in Fab Leagues.
100%. Josh Rojas signed with the White Sox just to pester the entire situation of about every infielder there. I have no interest in him in fantasy. I could be crazy, but do you have any thoughts on Josh Rojas?
I passed up Rojas for Brian Ramos in my DC. Beautiful. So
I
could have drafted either one. I went with Ramos. I figured he'd probably at least end the year there at third base again.
Yeah, I'm with you there. The Cubs surprised me a bit here because I felt like their rotation was – good enough. They went and signed Colin Ray, who I think we made fun of, or at least me and Ryan made fun of a lot because of the underlying metrics. Now he's one of the potential six-man rotations you talked about. Kind of ironic you have him and Javier Assad in the same rotation. A lot of similarities between the two, I'd say. Colin Ray, though, ADP of 640, as high as 580. Any interest there?
Not really. I don't think he really has starter's money, but how much would you want to pay Colin Ray anyway? Like, I think he got $5 million, and it's kind of like they have so many young guys that could fill a rotation spot. So it's kind of weird that they would sign him, but I don't know. Another avoid probably for me.
And I'm just throwing this one out here because Roster Resource has him as the starting third baseman for the Seattle Mariners. He has first base, third base eligibility somehow. That is what Donovan Solano, who signed the deal, ADP 700. On high as high as 580, potentially starting for the Seattle Mariners. He had his moments a couple years ago, actually, that was not horrible. But and at that ADP for depth in a DC, kind of makes sense if he's actually going to start.
It does. Yeah. He just went in that one DC I'm in. And I was thinking about him because I needed another third baseman. And there's not many left that have any playing time projected right now. So, yeah, I mean, there's just no pop. He's 37. I could have drafted him. I chose other positions or players. It's just, I don't know, like he's good for average though. He hasn't hit below 280 since 2019, which is, you probably can't say that about a lot of players, but I mean, he hasn't gone above 450 plate appearances any season, usually like the 200, 300 range for Solano. But at that point in the draft, I mean, there's the pickings are slim, so you got to go with what you have.
All right, last thing we have here before the debates, Uncle Ted in the chat here. Do you like Profar? I'm on the clock. I have PCA, Quan, Kowser, and Kerry Bonds, of course. So Profar would be his fifth outfielder. Unsigned, Jerks and Profar. What are your thoughts?
He's got to sign, I think. So
yeah, he's going to.
I think for a fifth, that's perfect for him.
Yeah, there you go. I agree. As a fifth outfielder, I'm in. I don't know what else you're sacrificing on your roster to take your fifth outfielder with Profar because he falls, but I don't know if he falls that much. But yes, I don't hate that at all. That's for sure. All right, let's get into those third base debates. For anybody keeping track at home, ADP from 1225 to 115 gives us about 12 drafts or so overall. And just going to go down the ADP board like usual. Some might seem pretty simple. Some might not, but they go right next to each other. So we talk. And the first one off the board, it's the fourth third baseman versus the fifth third baseman. Rafael Devers at 36.5, Ben. Manny Machado at 37.5. How do you approach this one?
Well, this is funny. I was just thinking as I was looking at who's up first, how so many of these players we talked about have been relevant to my current DCs, and I literally just had to make the same decision, Devers versus Machado, in my most recent one that just started up, and I went Devers. It was a tough decision in a vacuum. Like with no shoulder injury concerns with Devers, I would be 100% every time Devers versus Machado. Maybe switch it up, you know, don't want to take the same player all the time. But I would definitely lean Devers. And I still kind of lean Devers primarily because I think about what he means to the Red Sox, the money they have into him. I know they kind of want to trade him maybe, but that's all speculation. If he was actually hurt, I would hope they would address it with surgery right away because – he's getting paid a ton of money, Devers. He's their best hitter, all-around hitter, I would say. And he's only 28 still, so they don't want to harm his future. And even with the issues with the shoulder, his barrel rate, Devers was 13%, which is very good. His hard hit was over 50%. His xBA was 274, xSlug 520, xWOBA 366, all great numbers. The only thing is that he doesn't make the best contact, but he hits the ball so hard, like I just explained with those other numbers, that he kind of makes up for it. And he's just as consistent as they come. I listened to your preview with Shelly, and she just said, I agree with what she said. She's like, he's just like a rock solid, set it and forget it. You're going to hopefully get like 90-plus runs in RBIs, around 30 homers, maybe five steals, and at least a 275 average with Devers. And so I won't go into Machado yet, but they're 4-5 for me as well in my ranking, so they're back-to-back, but I just think Devers will be fine because there hasn't been any, but also too, like we didn't know about Braxton Garrett getting Tommy John until a month later. But so who knows if anything did happen to Devers, and they just haven't said it yet, but I think he'll be okay. And for that, I'm going to lean Devers for now.
This one's really, really tricky for me because if Devers plays 150 plus games, his power, his homer runs and RBIs will probably all surpass Manny Machado. And Devers has been a more consistent batting average asset, even though Machado has shown it in his career. Like, I guess actually it's probably not fair to say Machado had a down year in 2023, but overall has probably been the same as the two. But Machado runs a little more. Again, 2023, he had that injury, didn't run much. But other than that, I feel like he runs more than Devers, and Devers still gives you about five steals, which is not bad. So it's very, very close for me. It's just I'm going Machado. And it's very weird. Like it's very, very tight. I know I've gone Machado a ton before. With Devers, I guess the injury still scares me because it was both shoulders, but he should be fine on paper, like you said. Like, so that might just be me trying to tell myself it's Machado. But I love the consistent run production from Machado of late just because he's one of the few guys that's gonna do it with Tatis always hurt, it feels like. Where Devers has other guys to help with that situation, so he's not always going to have those options. So San Diego relies more on Machado, if that makes sense, to get things done. Again, I'm grasping at straws between the two. They're both very, very good. I'm not going to tell anybody to take Devers instead of Machado or Machado instead of Devers. I'm going to take Machado on this one. But it is very, very close. Thus, I think, why they go right next to each other in drafts.
Yeah, I mean, Machado, like, he's not far behind in the numbers that I was reciting for Devers. I mean, the barrel rate's a little bit lower, but not by much. It's still above average, 11% for Machado. The hard hit was still great. The xBA was identical. yeah, I don't know. Like, I was thinking of like how last year went in drafts and how it's been. Like, Machado had that huge, I think it was like an overcorrection in the market when he went so low last year. Yep. I think it's like going in the 70s or whatever.
Because he had a shoulder injury. He wasn't going to play defense for like a month or something.
And he had 258 in 2023. So the average declined. So I get it. Like, it kind of corrected now to, he is very similar to Devers now that I'm looking at his profile from the last few years, Machado. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just, I think because of the age and we've seen Manny, I don't, it is super close. So in my next draft, I'll probably go Machado, honestly.
Well, that's my point. Like, some of these debates, I'm like, all of a clear, hard stance. Like, no. Like, I'm just not, but then this one, I seem to just lean Machado, but it's not an opposite. Like, I'm not opposed to Devers' situation. To each their own is the way I look at this one. I don't think you can go wrong barring something fluky taking place.
Right.
All right. The next debate we have here, a couple youngins. I could have thrown a third one in here, but I wanted to keep this one kind of on the smaller side. We got Junior Caminero coming in at 91. Mark Vientos coming in at 95. So they're going, and Jordan Westberg actually jumped it. When I made this the night before, it went Caminero, Vientos, Westberg. Now Westberg jumped Vientos by like half a pick. We're leaving Westberg out of this. I just want to talk Caminero and Vientos because these are two of the young guys. We saw Vientos put it together, especially in the postseason. Caminero had a small sample because the Rays like playing time manipulation, but the hype train is real, Ben. So if you're going to these two guys, Junior Caminero versus Mark Vientos.
I have them back to back as well. So it goes Caminero 6 for me, Vientos 7. I have drafted Caminero already in one of my teams. I may have said this before with other shows, but I remember watching him last year. I just fell in love with his swing and how good of a hitter he looks. And he's that major prospect. I think also with Caminero, the schedule with the Rays will be challenging for when they're on the road. But I think getting out of the trop is going to help their hitters a lot. And Caminero, like, he didn't have the best underlying numbers last year, but he barely played, and he was like the top, I think he was the top prospect in baseball at one point. So I believe that he's going to, I don't know if he's going to break out like we'd be hoping for. I think he's going to do really well this year. Like, nitpicking with Caminero, the one thing is that he kind of chases a lot. He had a 38.6% O swing, which is very high. I mean, it's kind of close to Vientos though too. So not, you can't really cite a big difference there. But like I said before on other shows, hitters can get away with chasing a lot as long as they make good contact in the zone and when they do make contact. So it's not a big concern for me. He is young, and he didn't strike out a lot with that. So that's also a positive sign. He only struck out 21% of the time, Caminero. And I think really the K rate is the big differentiator for me. I'll quickly go into Vientos. He almost struck out 30% of the time, Vientos, last year. Granted, it was like his first full year as well. He had a worse contact rate than Caminero. Vientos was 68% overall versus Caminero 70. Still both bad, but under 70 is definitely not good. Vientos had a better barrel rate. This is just like the other one, I think. They're very close. It's just a preference, and I wouldn't take Caminero every time over Vientos by any means, but I did go with Caminero the first time just because I like him a little bit more than Vientos. And last thing I just want to mention is the homer to fly ball rate for Vientos. I think we talked about it right after the season ended for, I forget what show it was, but Vientos, when you lower the plate appearances to 450, he had the third highest homer to fly ball rate behind Judge and Otani and ahead of O'Neill and Ketel Marte. And the one thing that's a little concerning is that he had a sub 40% fly ball rate with that. So Vientos had a 44% ground ball rate, which is okay, but he had a 36% fly ball rate. You want him to hit more fly balls. So I think he was a little maybe lucky with the rate at which he had homers. So I would expect that to regress a little bit, but he would probably get more playing time in theory because he'd be starting the entire year this time. So I'm just a little cautious about the homer ceiling. Well, I know people are saying like he could hit a ton of homers. I'm sure he'll hit a good amount. Vientos, it's just some things are a little concerning for me, and I think Caminero has the better pedigree, and so that's why I'm leaning Caminero.
Yeah, I'm going to go Caminero as well, but it's not a slight on Vientos. It's more just early pick drafting for me. Like, Caminero feels more like the all-around, like, four-category guy. He's not going to run a ton, but could almost give you a Machado Devers-type profile where he hit 270 with, you know, close to 30 home runs, and the runs in RBIs will be pretty formidable, like team-dependent, but it'll be formidable. so he could be like a light version of a Machado Devers. Where to me, Vientos, and a lot of it, like you even mentioned the ground ball rate, he hits the ball so hard. That's why his BABIP was so high last year and his average was high. 324 BABIP, 266 average, and smaller stints like the year before at 211 with the 264 BABIP. Like those are obviously going to help him. So to catch 22, if he gets the ball in the air more, his batting average probably drops, but he might get you more home runs. Now, you also mentioned the sample size. If he goes and plays another 40 games, gets 150 games, even with a fallback or regression on the home run to fly ball, I still think he's good for 30 to 35 homers pretty well. So I guess, like, could he be an Austin Riley light without the Riley shocks me. I'll say this. I drafted him recently. I dug in before I drafted him. He actually still hits for batting average, which shocks me. Like, you just don't expect it from him. That's what surprises me. So, like, Vientos could be like a Riley with like a 20-point batting average drop, 30-point batting average drop, which sucks. But the power potential could be Austin Riley, where I think Caminero is more like a Devers Machado floor with limited steals. And I'll take that Caminero thing, because literally we're having this debate in 2025 right now. If we did this same show in 2026, he might be going up against Devers and Machado in the ADP world, because he is that talented. He's 21 years old. So, like, the bigger question, I think, is does he tap into it this year, or does he need to go through some growing pains? That's the bigger question to me. Not when will he do it. It's not if he can do it, it's when. And if you're thinking it's this year, I'll take him over Vientos. And I love Mark Vientos, but I'll take him over Vientos.
Yeah, and I think you may have said it, but the last thing I didn't mention was that the average, I think, could be a lot higher with Caminero's, and Vientos has that 30% strikeout rate. So, like, everyone's been saying, average is tough to get later in the draft. So that's another reason why I would lean Caminero more often than that, probably.
Yep, for sure. All right, the next one we have up here is a guy that I drafted in the third round of the meatball draft. He's now going at so I probably still have the max pick on him. The men pick on him. But this is one Royce Lewis, the 10th third baseman off the board, ADP of 127 versus Matty Chapman, the 11th third baseman off the board, ADP of 131. Where are you going here, Ben? Because it feels like everybody's running away from Royce Lewis these days.
Yeah, I mean, we can't blame you for that pick, Bob. It was August, and he was looking great until that collapse happened.
Dom thought he was going to be a first-round pick. So
yes, I did hear him say that.
Yes.
Yeah, so no worries. Hopefully he bounces back, and then you'll look like a genius.
Play 140 games. I'll take my chances.
Yeah, 35 homers. Yeah, well, yeah. Sounds great. But yeah, I'm not banking on that, though, so I'm definitely leaning Chapman here. I have Chapman 10, Lewis 12 in my third-base rankings. I think I even said something to you. I texted you one day doing my rankings about how confused I was with Chapman because of what happened. The biggest thing with him was the steals came out of nowhere. I think he had at least 15 steals last year, where he never had like more than five or even four, I think, in a season. Chapman,
not a runner at all. No,
not at all. And the joke was he took all of Tyro's steals. Go figure.
Sick joke.
Yeah, let's see what happens this year. I would bet money that Tyro steals more than Chapman this year. I would say
that's a fair bet.
Yeah, but like Chapman kind of, I think he finally hit on the potential, because his average was always so low, but he always hit the ball so hard. And the one really big thing with Chapman is that I remember looking at him, his strikeout rate has come down a lot in the last few years. In 2020, 2021, Chapman had carried over 30%. Granted, you had the small sample of 2020, but still the full year 2021, he was 32.5% strikeout rate. Then he dropped that in 2022 and 23, Chapman, to 27.4 and 28.4. And then last year went down all the way down to 24.4. So he cut it almost 10 percentage points in five seasons, which is a pretty good accomplishment. Then I wanted to look at the swing strike rate because, okay, is he like just not swinging and missing as much? And yeah, so he had a sub 10% swing strike rate, Chapman. So I think he made a good effort. Something happened where he cut down on the swing and miss and it paid off. But like with other players, I know Josh Lowe's an example. He did that in 2023. And then last year he went back to striking out just as often as he did before. That's also a concern that we have Brenton Doyle. But with Chapman, he hit the ball as hard as ever. That was always his calling card. The barrel rate was always off the charts. He didn't pull the ball a lot, so it kind of hurt him with the power, but I think he's going to hit in the middle of the lineup for the Giants finally. And I, I just trust the health because he's shown Chapman that he can play full seasons. He's a great defender, so he's going to be in there every day. The barrel rate was 12.6%. I hit a 40% hard hit percentage. His exit velocity was 93.2 miles per hour. It's just a lot of good under. I'm definitely above the market where I have him ranked. It's just I know not to take him where I have him ranked, but I'll stop there with Chapman for now.
No, I love Chapman, and this is a tough one because I think skills and talent wise, Royce Lewis is way better than Chapman. It's just even last year, I don't know how healthy he was late in the season because he played so bad. We haven't seen him play that bad before, so I wonder if he was just playing through the injury for once instead of sitting out like he always does, which makes me question things. But it's like he's going to be 26, still super young. We haven't seen him play more than 82 games, which was last year when it was bad. Didn't get a stolen base all last year, which was horrible. There's a litany of things you could say that was just not great when it came to Royce Lewis. But the things that were good, barrel rate was still 11.2%. Max EV dropped a bit. Hard hit rate dropped a bit. But that could be also he saw his ground ball rate continue to go up last year from the year before. There's still a lot of the profile that I think is very, very good. There's still the biggest problem is can he stay healthy? He might go play more second base. So that second base, third base is very intriguing when it comes to Royce Lewis, the old MICI situation. So I don't just cross Royce Lewis off. I think it's a team-dependent thing when you're drafting if you're taking Royce Lewis. I talked about it even during the meatball draft. I quickly took an Alex Bregman later to make sure I had a guy there. Like there's layers to this situation. And that was with him going early. Now, like in a fab, say on the OC on Monday night, like there'll be replacement value at some point, or you can take a third baseman later. It's a 10th round pick now compared to a third round pick. So I'm trying to say there's wiggle room on this situation, and maybe the room doesn't like him and he drops even more. That's interesting. On the Chapman side of things, I like Chapman a lot. This is not even a homer thing. It's just the way people know the way I'm a safe drafter. He's as one of the more consistent guys you'll find. Like the stolen bases are gravy on top of it, but you mentioned a lot of things, but you know, consistency in playing time, at least 140 games every year outside of the COVID year since 2018. The dude's hit at least 20 home runs in all but one season since 2018 non-COVID years. He's scoring like over 90 runs most of the time. RBIs, that's a team-dependent thing. Between the A's and the Giants, that's a them problem. And he always hits around 240-ish. He might have a good year, might have a little down year, but like you can almost pencil in a stat line for Matt Chapman right now, barring an injury. That is a very comforting thing in round 10. That's a very comforting thing to be able to do. So I like Matt Chapman. I'll take Matt Chapman in this one. But if someone wanted to walk up and be like, you know what, I'm going to take the upside and the potential ceiling of a Royce Lewis, and you want to go like full YOLO, I get it. I totally get it because I don't think we've seen the full Royce Lewis effect yet. He might not run, but this could be, again, this could be your cheaper Riley Devers type that hits 30-plus home runs and but he might hit 260. We don't know what his average. So that's my point. There's a lot of we don't know who Royce Lewis is right now. We know who Matt Chapman is, and for that, I'll have Matt Chapman winning this debate for me.
Yeah, with Lewis, the barrel rate actually stayed the same compared to 2023, so that's encouraging, despite the exit velocity dropping almost – or actually more than 3 miles per hour on average, and the xBA was pretty low. But like you said, who know? It could have been a result of all the injuries that he had. And say you take a relatively safe base leading up to this point, I could see going for the upside and Royce Lewis. I think it's more appealing in a fab league too, where because in a DC, at least in your case, you backed it up with Bregman, but I guess at this point still you'd hope
signed yet. So who knows?
Yeah, so you have like half a third baseman between those two spots right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the upside is there. It's this rough scene. Like he had that double that one, like the first at bat of the season, and he got hurt, of course. But I could see switching it up to take Royce at least once, but more often than not, I prefer Chapman.
Yep. We're pretty much on the same page there. All right. Next debate we have up here. This is kind of at least two different profiles for three players, maybe even three, depending on how you want to break it down here. But it's really interesting seeing these three go next to each other. And real quick, before we move on, I threw it up there, but I don't know if you saw it, Ben. When we talked about my Royce Lewis pick in round three, good friend of ours, Ryan Bloomfield, said it was a terrible pick. And you know what's great? He wanted to get that comment out so bad he misspelled pick. But that's how fast he wanted to make sure he got that out, and I saw it in the moment. That's all that was, right? That was pure joy and quick typing on the phone is what that turned out to. But, yeah. All right. Next debate. Eugenio Suarez. Talked a lot about him on this show. ADP 173. Alec Bohm, ADP 182. Isak Paredes in his new home in Houston, where better for his approach, 192. So I'm going about 10 picks apart from 173 to 192. How do you approach this? Because I know there could be comments like, oh, the value between picks or whatever, but just these three profiles, how do you differentiate them?
Well, they're all very close for me. It's like ADP has them. I haven't really been targeting this range of third base yet.
Either. Yeah,
I've been going for other positions. So I guess in the right draft, I would be okay with taking them maybe, but I don't know. They all have their issues. I have it Suarez, Bohm, Paredes with Josh Jung between Bohm and Paredes right now. I've been passing on Jung as well too. I'll say that. But yeah, so I'm not sour with Suarez. I mean, I am sour with Suarez after what happened last year, but I'm still okay with him being ahead of the other two. The barrel rate was the best out of the three for Suarez, 11.3%. His XBA was only 249, which is very good, it seems like, for him, because he's had some issues with the average lately. I think a lot of that, though, was the Seattle season, because there's been debates about the batter's eye, even in the Discord for the Bubba and the Bloom Discord and Patreon. We've been talking about that. And also, too, like, Suarez was going to sit up. Like, we thought he was going to lose his job. He's going to get DFA'd. So that's part of the why I haven't really wanted to draft him yet. The K rate's still pretty elevated. So he's like the power, low average guy out of the group. Bohm, I'll just quickly go through them all. Bohm is the average, no power guy. He had a ton of RBI, so he was really valuable. Looking at it now, maybe I would probably prefer Paredes over Bohm, because I think Paredes in Houston could really get a lot of homers and differentiate himself from Bohm. I think Paredes did have a decent average 2 years ago. But there's only the online numbers. Like, the barrel rate is half, there's 4.5%. It's terrible for Paredes. And the hard hits, even worse, 27% last year. But he was an awful scenario going from Tampa to Chicago. It didn't really work for him at all. So I'm glad he moved. So yeah, I would definitely lean Suarez here. And then I'm undecided right now looking at Bohm and Paredes, but I have Suarez, Bohm, Paredes right now.
Yeah, I have it in that order as well, but it's like I have trouble drafting Suarez going into his, 33 years old. I liked him before because he's a lot cheaper, and it's like, okay, I'm going to get 30 home runs and a bad batting average, and he's my corner infielder, not my starting third baseman potentially. But now he's probably your starting third baseman this ADP. And we saw improvements. Strikeout rate was better. Batting average obviously was great. The run production, run scored, and run RBIs were great. So I'll jump back in. The team's still going to be very good in Arizona. It's just, can he repeat that? Because let's not forget, he was about to be probably DFA'd at one point last year. Alec Bohm is a guy I just can't use the draft capital on. And it's maybe if I draft a heavy power team, I need batting average with, like, not going full Luis Arraez. Okay, like, you'll get a little production. But Bohm just doesn't really do much. He 15 home runs last year, 20 the year before, 13 the year before that. I think at best you're getting 20 homers at best. The RBIs have been good because he's in Philadelphia, which is awesome. He'll be there again this year, but they're also rumored to wanting to trade Alec Bohm. Let's keep that in mind. One of his best assets is his batting average consistently, 280, 274, 280. And that's where I'm referring to. If you want a batting average boost late in your draft, that's not bad. That's a good spot to be. If you're comfortable in your power and you want a good batting average boost, then I could see Alec Bohm. I'm just never really in that position at third base to want to take that kind of guy. So I'd send, and he's first base, third base, I believe. Let me triple check. He's just third base this year. Okay, so just third base is a bummer as well. But if you want the batting average, Bohm's your guy. Otherwise, he kind of moves to the side in this whole conversation we're having, where Isak Paredes is the wild card. Hit 250 2 years ago, 238 this past year. But the walk rates have been great. The striker rates have been good. BABIP was almost identical last year than the year before. But that Chicago thing you mentioned screwed him up a lot. 12 fewer home runs, 80 RBIs, like a lot of that stuff. Now everyone's talked about it, back to a ballpark that benefits him. You mentioned the drop in barrel rate. Like, he was 5.9 and 6.4 the previous 2 years. Hard hit rate's always been garbage. Like, he is literally a creature of his environment and needs to be in this environment that he will have at the Crawford boxes. So maybe I have it more like Suarez, Paredes, Bohm in this situation, because I want that power from third base. Because I don't think Bohm's ever going to be the power guy they want him to be. So give me Eugenio here, which to lead back to the very first thing I think he said in this grouping, I'm not drafting this area at all.
Right.
It's a tough one.
The bone power thing is tough when it's your corner, one of your corner infielders. You can't be having sub 20 homers from that position, at least this point in the draft. So I guess in the right build, it would maybe make sense, but it's got to be very specific, I think.
Yep. Now, this next one to me is very interesting because we're going with a player looking to make his MLB debut. Then we're going to a veteran in his age 34 season that his team doesn't want him there anymore. So this is going to be fun. We got Matt Shaw of the Chicago Cubs, who are also now rumored to Alex Bregman. So this might be null and void at some point in time. Matt Shaw's got an ADP of 216 right now. Going shortly thereafter is one Nolan Arenado at 220. Arenado, the Cardinals don't even want him there. That's the crazy part. So we got Shaw, who for now looks to make his debut. Amazing, you know, winter of ball. But then again, they might go sign Bregman. And then you got Arenado, who team doesn't want him. How do you approach this in drafts? Because we have a Shaw question later as well.
Yeah, I kind of have no interest in either of these guys either right now, it feels like. Yep. I'm behind the market in my overall rankings with both. I do have them back-to-back. I have it Arenado, third base 20, and then Shaw 21 for me. So I'll go talk about Nolan first. It's just I think he's at the end, at least offensively. I'm talking about Paredes' barrel rate. Arenado's was lower. His was 3.2%. And this is a guy who said 40 homers like multiple years, I think, in Colorado. His hard hit was only 31.2%. His XBA was 256. His exit velocity was only 86.3 miles per hour. The only thing he didn't do was strike out. But, I mean, it's like the wet noodle thing I've said before. There's no oomph behind his swing right now. I don't think he was injured at all. And he's turned into what Paredes is. But he's the older version. Paredes is better at that pull profile, I think, than Arenado is. And I just don't want to draft that kind of profile on my team. And I have no reason to think that Arenado's going to turn around right now because – I know he's declined over the last 3 years in terms of power, and I think his like OPS has gone down each year as well. So yeah, the projections do like him though. He is hitter 90 per steamer, where the other guys have been in the hundreds that we've been talking about. He's even ahead of Bohm in terms of in steamer's eyes, but I think steamer's is looking at the couple of years prior a little too much, and I just think Arenado's toast. But I'll stop there for now.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there now. Maybe a new environment gets him going, but yeah, I'm worried about it because he's still playing every day, but all the production keeps falling off, as you mentioned. Now, you know, if he could have gone to Boston and hit like seventh in that lineup, that'd be kind of interesting. Like, there are scenarios that makes him somewhat appealing, but I'm still not drafting him at all, ADP 220. I'd rather take Josh Jung going right after him, Slick Willie, the new mascot, stuff like that. There's other guys of interest I'd be going after him on. Then I'll just go to Matt Shaw here for a second. I was actually quite interested in Matt Shaw when they traded Paredes because I'm like, oh, this makes sense. They traded a player, get your number one prospect up. Here we go, yada, yada. And then it was like 2 days ago, I think, when the Bregman news dropped. I'm like, what? Like, and still, Bregman wants more money and more years, so we'll see what happens. But maybe they'll figure something out. But what we've seen from Shaw is a heck of a power-speed combo. 21 homers, 31 steals this past year. Always has shown steals in the minor or speed. Be 23 this year. Hit for average at every stop in the minors. Like, to me, it's almost like the junior Caminero situation. Caminero's better. I'm not going to go that level of what's going on. But it's more of a how soon can he get comfortable and produce thing. And that's what you're trying to gamble on at this ADP. And a lot cheaper than junior Caminero if you want. So I can understand that argument this season. So I go Shaw over Arenado. If you want to here, just purely for upside. But yeah, I'm with you. I'm not really either guy here, but give me Shaw over Arenado if someone is making this decision in drafts.
Yeah, I agree with you too, how you were higher on Shaw to start out, and then now you're kind of cool. Me too. The first thing that did it for me, though, was lineup position. So Shaw's projected to hit bottom of the lineup for the Cubs. Yeah. And when you look at it, I don't think he's going to crack the top anytime soon. They have a pretty good lineup now. So that hurts a lot. I mean, at this point in the draft, it doesn't matter as much because you're getting into the 200s. So all the guys that are earlier in the lineup in their lineups have been taken by now more often than not. So it's not as big of a deal, but at least Arenado would hit kind of fourth or like fifth or sixth, probably wherever he goes. But the thing that was appealing with Shaw too, you mentioned, was the steals. If you get a 30 steal third baseman, you're looking at like what Ellie was last year, but I'm not saying Matt Shaw is Ellie Dela Cruz. It's just that you're getting out of position steals, kind of like what why JRAM so appealing as well. But yeah, it's just always, the one thing for Shaw is that he did play at double and triple A last year. So he's at the stage where he's ready to come to the majors. Yep. If he actually produces, who knows? That's always the $1 million question. So yeah, I don't know if I want to take a gamble and a 15 teamer on Shaw. I think he's a great 12 team pick though.
He's a fun one on Monday night. So I'm going to say myself having some fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely take Shaw over Arenado in the shower league. It's the deeper leagues that where I play that there's a little bit of appeal with Arenado because of the stability of, I guess, suckiness that he brings now. But yeah, it's they're, like with the other grouping, I'm not the biggest fan of targeting either one right now.
Yeah, get your third baseman early, folks. That's pretty much the moral of the story. If you can, we say that about a lot of these positions, obviously, but you're really trying to blindfold dartboard situation the farther down the board you go. Speaking of blindfold dartboards, the next one we have here, former Chicago Cub, Christopher Morel, now Tampa Bay Ray, coming in with an ADP of 281. Now, he is second base, third base eligible, which is nice. So, you got Christopher Morel at 281. You got Ryan McMahon at 282, a guy I've had a soft spot for pretty much his entire career since we've been doing shows. So, what's your thoughts on Morel versus McMahon? Kind of two different profiles, but more similar than people might think.
I agree. So, I have a McMahon Morel. Actually, I have them back to back as well. This is funny how this happens when you do your own ranking sometimes. I was going to say this. Who do you think has the worst K rate last year?
Since you asked the question, I'm going to say it's Ryan McMahon.
Yeah, by almost 3 percentage points.
It was bad last year.
He started out so well too, because I had him in a main event, and then I think he just—it's one of those things that, like in a 15, you can't not play him.
The year before it was even worse.
Yeah. Oh, he collapsed the prior year as well too.
Well, 32% K rate the year before.
Oh yeah, well, yeah. That's, man, thank God for Colorado, right?
Yes.
Because
yes,
I mean his hard hit McMahon was 49%, which is almost 10 percentage points better than Morel's was last year. But then when you look at XBA, so I mean Morel's famous for hitting I think 190 something last year, and McMahon was at least 240, but the XBA was 243 to McMahon and 227 to Morel, so not a big difference. McMahon made more contact, but only by 4 percentage points more. Morel was 68%, which is pretty bad. So, I mean, I think I got to a point in one of my DCs where I was looking to take McMahon, and I don't think he made it back to me. He's just someone that he definitely has split issues with cores in a way, like most cores players do. It's so at least in NFBC, you can kind of sit him, but even at this range in the draft, especially for 15s, you kind of need him to play all the time. So you kind of have to turn your nose when he's on the road, I think, McMahon. And then with Morel, playing time's kind of an issue. At one point, he wasn't starting for the Rays on roster resource. But I think now he's probably going to get a first chance. And honestly, though, after I said the thing about Caminero, I think Morel maybe I should give him a little more credit now that they're going to be out of the trap. Because yeah. I don't think he had a homer when he went to the Rays last year.
He had one his first game or two or something, and then that was it.
Yeah, so maybe Morel turns it around. I mean, he's got the power of speed. He definitely has more upside than McMahon. So I guess, I don't know. I guess what I'm saying now kind of makes me want to lean towards Morel for the upside, even though I have it as McMahon first. I don't know. It's a tough one.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I'm at with this one. I'm leaning Morel for that upside, getting him out of the trap, getting him back to maybe the guy we saw hit 26 homers in 107 games. Like I'm not saying he's going to hit 30 bombs. I don't think he's going to be as bad as he was with Tampa Bay type thing. Like he could hit 230 to 240 and get me 25-plus homers. I think that'll be pretty solid for a second base, third base, this ADP. Where McMahon, I love. The one thing, again, similar to, you know, the Chapman's conversation and whatnot, McMahon, you can just write his stat line down, essentially. Dude's getting like 240 with 23 home runs and like 5 stolen bases, and that's your stat line. That's what he's going to do. And that's comforting if you're – it was very comforting when he was a middle infield, corner infield guy back in the day. Now he's third base only. So I like McMahon if you want stability and kind of know what you're going to get. I think that's awesome. And he might gain eligibility in season because he can play first base, second base, all over the place. So there's a lot to potentially like there. But the more we've talked, and now that we're going down the board in ADP where you start taking maybe more chances or whatnot, especially in a fab type league, I think Morrell has a ton of upside here going from to the minor league ballpark outside of the Trop, plus the games on the road. Like if you're ever going to try to find any weird angle on their dumb schedule where they're going to spend almost the second half on the road, essentially, you want a younger guy. That's the way I see it. So he's 26. He might be better on the road, but for upside alone, give me Christopher Morrell in this one. And I have plenty of Ryan McMahon shares. Don't get me wrong. I like me some Ryan McMahon, but I'm going to go Morrell on this one. A lot of it is because he is leaving the Trop.
Yep. I just switched my rankings around on the fly. So there we go.
Beautiful. Beautiful. All right. Last one we have here is Jaime Candelario, first base, third base guy, ADP of 301 versus Joey Ortiz at 305. This is a combo most people probably would not consider talking about, but welcome to Bench with Bubba. Candelario versus Ortiz. I say this for a couple reasons, because the Candyman was really good last year, and I was all over that. And then he got hurt, and then there's platoon issues, and there could be platoon issues this year. And then there's Joey Ortiz, who a lot of optimism for in the past, didn't get consistent playing time, now should have an everyday role. Are we not caring as much about the everyday role as we maybe should be? That's why I wanted to talk about these two. So what are your thoughts on Candelario versus Joey Ortiz post pick 300?
Yeah, this is – so I have it right now, Candelario 25 and then Ortiz 27 in my third base rankings. I just took Ortiz, though, in my main of – in my DC that's getting close to finishing as my – honestly, as my starting third baseman. I got shut out there at the end. But, you know, with Ortiz, though, it's not – he has some power, some speed. And so for that, I'm not – for that reason, I'm not so upset with it. I did try to get a third baseman quickly afterwards to back him up with. Thing with Candelario is for like the power or the perceived power that he has, he didn't have the best underlying numbers. The barrel rate was fine, 8% last year. But, I mean, the exit velocity for Candelario was under 87 miles per hour on average. His hard hit percentage was under 40%. Only had an XBA of 230. And this is already – and this is with him it was 223. It was even worse. I was reading the wrong line. And the hard hit was even lower. The hard hit was 34% for Candelario, XBA of 223. And this is with him already in a full season of Great American Ballpark, which were – I remember you being very high in Candelario last year because of the move and the multi-position eligibility, which is he still has. He is first and third, which is nice. But – I mean, roster resource has him in a platoon for some reason. I don't know why he's a switch hitter. I think he would play full time still for the Reds, Candelario. They're both projected to kind of hit low in the order. I think Candelario is more like the five hitter for the Reds. The last time I looked, they had him seventh, which I think is kind of low considering how up in the air their lineup is right now. I think Candelario is a little more, they have him at seven still. There's no way Jake Fraley hits fifth ahead of Candelario, I don't think.
It shouldn't be, no.
I think he had one homer of that last year, Fraley. So I lean Candelario, but I'm trying to look up if I pass on him to get Ortiz. Candelario went before Ortiz went. They actually went in the same round. So someone took Candelario in the 19th earlier, and then I took Ortiz later in the 19th. So I probably would have gone with Candelario first based on how my rankings are, but it's kind of a toss up. I liked having the little bit better average, hopefully, from Ortiz because his XBA wasn't the best, but I think he still hit like 250-ish last year. I know the Brewers want to play him all the time, so I think his playing time's safe. So it's I don't know. I still lean Candelario by a little bit, but I'm fine with either one, I think.
Yeah, it's to me, again, and people hate these comments, is more team-dependent at this point. It comes down to, like, do you believe Candelario plays, does not platooned? I believe that last year when they signed him because there's a similar conversation at that point, and then CES got hurt and it changed all of that. CES is back. I guess why one reason they think it's going to be a platoon situation. Lux in the mix. Like, there's so many more moving parts there, but there always is. And it looks like Candy's going to play over some, you know, that's why Noelvi's in AAA, so on and so forth. Like, there's they want Candelario to play. They paid him. The Reds don't pay a lot of people. Let's put it that way. So I like Candy a lot. If he plays 140 games, it's an if. We haven't seen a lot. 245, 250 average. Could run into 23, 24 homers if he plays that much. Like, he could. Where Ortiz, I think this might be the year we finally see him play every day. And in that case, this is like a 15-15 dude. Like, this is a Jeremy Pena type profile, if that makes sense.
I like
and
that.
And a Jeremy Pena type profile, a past pick 300, is very enticing. And that's where I kind of think to myself, okay, that's why I kind of led in the intro to this debate is, are we not valuing Joey Ortiz enough right now? Is there still questions of there's too many moving parts in that infield? We don't know where at all, like Durbin and all these guys fit. Like, it seems like Ortiz is the leading man for a starting job, just where type thing. Because maybe they play him at shortstop for all we know. There's been rumors of that. Now you're going to get shortstop third base at some time. That's pretty sweet. There's a lot of moving parts with Joey Ortiz, but he's young. We haven't seen him do it for a full year, so there's questions. I get it. But if we get a full year of Joey Ortiz, this is Jeremy Peña type stuff. Maybe, I don't know if he's full Zach Neto, but like that kind of profile, they're very similar. Like, that's a pretty sweet profile post 300. So I'm going to go Joey Ortiz here. For the post pick 300, let's take a gamble and go shoot for some upside here. Plus, he'll destroy Candelario in steals. Like, that's a no brainer. But if you might not need steals at that point, so it might not matter, but he'll destroy him in steals. So I'm going to go Joey Ortiz, shooting for the upside that we could potentially get with him.
I get that. Yeah. The Ortiz did have some underwhelming Statcast data, but I mean, it was his first year, so who knows? He had 20 homer power in the minors. I just looked up his, he had 19 homers 2 years ago in the minors. So he has the power. It's just him getting used to major league pitching, I think.
Yep, for sure. All right. A couple listener questions here. We had Uncle Ted in the chat. Would you pair Adley and Joey or Jonah Heim and stash Dalton rushing, two switch hitting catchers and a monster lefty? There's your monster lefty thing. I want nothing to do with Dalton rushing right now.
Or Jonah Heim. I'd probably go with a better catcher too.
There you go. Answer to that question. All right. We got a couple listener questions here on the old Twitter sphere. Moneyberg says, best value, worst value at the position. Hmm. What do you got there?
Let me try to take a quick look here. I should have prepared that.
If anybody wants an in-depth third base, we're doing a third base preview on Bubba and the Bloom this evening.
Yeah. Actually, I have a good way of looking this up with the way I have my
rankings. Yeah, you have your sheets. Yeah, you should have something there.
Yeah, so honestly, I have – oh, here we go. I think Max Muncy is very undervalued.
That's fair. At 250, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he just got hurt last year. He was going – well before the prior year. I mean, people get hurt all the time. And I don't think he's at a platoon. He's in the best lineup in baseball. He has the chance at 30 homers, and you can get that around to pick 250. I think Muncy, I haven't taken him yet because I haven't had enough cushion with my average, I think, to take him because he could hit like 220 or 210. So I think Muncy's the biggest. And then I think the early guys are pretty fairly priced. I think Michael Garcia is overpriced.
Yeah, I'm having a tough time with Michael Garcia, but we'll see. I think to me, it's probably just, I just have such a hard time with Alec Bohm. I really do. He's such a blah profile that I don't. I know he does it because of RBIs. If he doesn't get RBIs, if he's stuck like 75, the dude is worthless at that ADP. Like, for what else he can do.
When you look at value, he's worth the value, but the profile is so strange. It has to fit just right with what you have, I think.
And RBIs can be such a volatile team dependent stat that it could just happen against his, not even his fault. And now his value just goes out the window. So,
yeah.
All right. BP at futures_bet says, if he doesn't come up during the ADP debate, I would like to hear both of your thoughts on Matt Shaw. Well, you got those, big man, because he was a part of the ADP debate. My buddy Darth Disney says, could you please discuss Caminero versus Vientos? Funny, we did that. I was going Vientos, but lately started taking Caminero more. What's your guys' thoughts? So we covered that for you. I was Caminero. I think you were Caminero too,
right? Yeah, I'm team Caminero too.
Yeah, so we were both Caminero on that one. Moneyberg also says, any concern with Devers and his shoulder issues? Did you end up having surgery on one or both? I think he didn't have surgery on any from what I heard. I thought he was just rehabbing them. I could be wrong, but I'm not concerned. I'm just taking Machado over him for that slight little factor. But what say you?
Yeah, it definitely made me pause when I took Devers ahead of Machado. I think Devers gonna have the better roto season because he's had it. He had the 38 homer year with a almost 280 average, 113 RBIs, 101 runs. They both have good lineups. I don't know. I just something about Devers I really like, even though he's a Red Sox player. But I don't care. I still think Devers is slightly better than Machado. It's just that the shoulder injury or the question over the shoulders kind of makes it a little bit more even for me, like I said earlier. But next draft, I'll pick Manny instead of Devers.
Yeah, no, that it's literally like flipping coins when it comes down to that one. So can't blame either way.
If we heard that he's 100%, I would definitely lean Devers over Machado. But for sure, until we hear that, it's more of a coin flip.
Yep, I agree. If like I knew Devers was walking in with two perfect shoulders and no issues, I'd probably take Devers third catcher off the board, if not second.
You said third catcher. Yeah, catcher on the mind already.
Yeah, sorry, it always is. Like, this is my problem. I'm used to mean third baseman, but Jazz is all the way up there still. Like, it still confuses me having him at third base, but that's the reality of the situation.
He's really moving up a lot now.
He's up to 25. I'm going to have no Jazz shares, and it kills me because I've always had Jazz shares, always.
He went at the 1-2 turn in my 1DC, Jazz.
See, that's almost – what's crazier, that on the 1-2 turn in yours or when I told the Discord that William Contreras went at pick 16 on some of the 1-2 turn in my DC? Like, I love William, but that was quick.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think Jazz got jumped more, so you'd probably say Jazz. But he has the 20-40 profile, though, which is very rare. So I think it makes more sense to have someone like that go ahead of the catcher. But William's really good, though, too. So
William's ADP is 24.4 and Jazz is 25.1. So, but yeah, Jazz shows as high as 16, William as high as 21. That'll change when my draft completes, folks.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Absolutely crazy. All right, final thoughts, my friend. Another fun episode. Third base in the books. We'll have to do some outfield talk. Maybe no news because outfield's so much bigger. We'll see. Well, we'll see if they give us any news. I don't know what's going to happen, but no matter what, we'll be talking Monday. There'll be no news on that because we'll just be watching me make a fool out of myself for three hours on a live stream doing Beat Bubba OC. But what else you got? What are your thoughts on the third base and whatnot?
So I think I definitely want my CI to be a first baseman looking at the board right now. Because in the 200s, you have guys like Mountcastle, Michael Bush. I think they're a lot more safe than the third baseman in that range. So I think get a third baseman probably by the time Bregman hits, because I probably want to use Renjifo as a middle infielder. And then, I mean, if someone really drops, maybe you take them as your CI, but definitely try to get your third base early, I think. I think get third base and short earlier than first and second.
Yeah, no, you're on the same page with me on that one. There's a couple positions where I'm trying to make a very clear to myself to take certain players, like at certain times of the draft, let's put it that way. And other ones I'll definitely take my gambles on later. But yeah, we'll see where it goes. Again, outfield coming up sometime either next week or the week after, depending on scheduling. And we got the Beat Bubba OC on Monday night. And if you're a Bench with Bubba listener, you got positional previews going left and right and center all over the board for you. So have fun with those. And yeah, until next time, make sure you check out Ben on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. I'm at BDintric. This is Bench with Bubba, episode 717. Catch y'all next time.